In this episode of the Pick and Pop series of the PSB podcast, we have a guest host named Stu Singer. Stu is the director of performance psychology for the WNBA's Washington Mystics and the performance psychology coach for the University of Maryland women's basketball team, Fordham University women's basketball team, Rice University, and the Connecticut Sun, among others. He has worked with the men's national team and MLS soccer players, USA basketball team members, and Olympic gold medalists. Stu served an integral role in helping the University of Maryland reach back-to-back Final Fours in 2014 and 2015. His work focuses specifically on the how in the development of the mental skills needed for his athletes to regulate their emotions and attention in high-performance environments. So without further ado, let's get the episode started with Stu Singer. Stu, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, you know, I think I'd like to start off by maybe just having you kind of introduce yourself and give us your background and talk a little bit about where you come from and how you ended up in this in the performance psychology field.
Wow. That's a lot. I grew up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which I guess is the state capital, but it's the small city in between Philly and Pittsburgh. So ended up it's a big sports town. My family owned a sporting goods business, so literally grew up in sports and just playing sports, whether it be, you know, on teams or just in the neighborhood or playground. Basketball and soccer were my passions, and just really fell in love with everything that had to do with sport, really. And that included everything from the business aspect that from my family business to seeing how far I could, you know, how far I could take it. So that was kind of the starting point. And the journey to become a sports psychologist really actually originated in high school. My high school basketball coach had us do clinics on before our Saturday morning practices for the younger kids in the school district. And really started to enjoy, like, I just enjoyed coaching and being somebody that the younger players could come to and talk to and learn from, and I just started to really enjoy it. And so that was kind of the one part of it, and then the other part was that he handed us a copy of a magazine article that was on imagery and how to use your mind to create an image of success. This might have been my junior year, and I really found it super interesting. But you know, one of the things that I noticed was the guy that wrote the article had a PhD behind his name. And at that point in my life, I was way into my sports, way into my social world, not that into my education. So thought, well, I'm never going to be able to get a PhD, so maybe this won't be me. But ultimately, a couple years after college, ended up deciding that because I was ended up being a business major, and decided I actually didn't want to do that, and wanted to go back to school and wanted to coach, and thought I would get a degree in education and be a high school coach, and that's what I was going to do. But it turned out I didn't have a subject that I really wanted to teach. So what I realized, what I wanted to teach was life. And so decided to get a master's degree in counseling. And I was going to be a school counselor and a coach. And that is the path that I took. Did that, started coaching. And as I was coaching, realized how much I was using a lot of my counseling education in my coaching. Really started to gain a passion in the psychology of my teams and my athletes that I worked with. Felt like I did a pretty nice job with it. And that led me to saying, you know what, this is something I may want to pursue for real.
Oh, cool.
And so that's kind of, you know, the pathway. And then, you know, so I did start to dabble in it, meaning that I started to work with some local area athletes and some local area teams. And then I was really getting into it. And my wife actually finally said, you know, basically she was tired of me talking about it and basically said either go for it or quit bothering me with it. And said, if you want to get your doctorate, let's commit to it and do it. And that's what we did. So about, I guess a little bit over 9 years ago now, I decided to go back to school and get my doctorate in performance psychology.
Awesome. So now you have a company called Well Performance, and can you explain a little bit about what you do there?
Yes. So basically, it started off, again, like I said, all I wanted to do was, you know, was to now work with some athletes, some teams, and just directly one-on-one work was going to be great. And that's how it started off. But now it's grown to, you know, I work, you know, professionally in the WNBA. I work with about 4 or 5 Division I college programs. I work with local area pros from MLS, soccer. And I still do have some local, you know, clients that are high school aged or middle school age. And actually now clients from all over the country that can just call me via FaceTime. Some of them might be high school aged athletes, some are college age athletes. And it really grew though from there. So that's what we're doing. Every now and again, we do some corporate based work, sales teams or management teams like this as well. I created an app, that's in the app store. I have an online training program now. And when I think about it, if I was just, I would be absolutely lying to tell you that I had this vision of what this was going to become. All I wanted to do was help a few athletes with the mental aspect of performance. And it's all just kind of over the years grown and just presented itself and something would just make sense. And we'd say, okay, let's go after it. And that's kind of how we got here.
Yeah, cool. You know, for those people out there listening who, I mean, I'm somewhat familiar with performance psychology, but you know, I think there's still quite a few people out there that probably are a little bit in the dark there. Can you explain a little bit about what performance psychology actually means and what it all entails?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think a lot of people are still up in the air a little bit around, you know, how to define it. And, you know, and one of the things when I do a talk for a new team or program is I often say, I'm going to tell you what we're going to do today, but I'm also going to tell you what I am not. And what I am not is a motivational speaker. And I think sometimes motivational speaking even gets lumped into that means you're a mental skills coach. And I always say, I hope that what I say may motivate you. But the goal is not to be a motivational speaker. And so sometimes we get caught up in thinking that somebody that's super positive or just, you know, real rah-rah is performance psychology. And certainly it's probably way better environment than to be, you know, super negative and hurtful. But that's not performance psychology. And what I would say is that the difference is that a performance psychologist will be trained in, honestly, a lot of the clinical aspects of anxiety, depression, and, you know, bipolar, you name it. And then also in the techniques of how do you establish a working relationship with your individual client. And we understand the brain. So what does the brain do under stress and pressure? And it's not random, really. The brain has very specific functions. And so we start to really understand that. And we try to teach that to the teams and athletes that we work with so that they understand it. And the more that you understand about your brain, the more now you're saying, okay, I get why I do this. And then the big piece is, now what do I do with it? What do I do once these things start to happen that start to get in the way of my performance? And so I always try to say that, you know, and I'm admitting that my own profession sometimes I think is guilty of this, but certainly I think from a coaching perspective and a teaching perspective and a even parent perspective, and by the way, I'm all those, so I'm okay to also criticize myself in this, is that we too often talk about the what young people should do mentally, and we don't really understand to tell them how to do it. So sometimes we tell them, you need to get over the last mistake. You need to get over that last missed shot. You need to put it behind you. You need to get over the last loss that you had, the last bad game. Forget about it. Put it in the past. And it sounds really good, as if we've given them something really good to work with. And what I can tell you is the athlete is then stuck, especially the young athlete, is then stuck with, but how do I do this? Like, that's not an easy thing. How do I do that? And I keep thinking about it. And so where we've messed up is that we give them the what, but not the how. Mm-hmm. And what I hope to do with the teams and athletes that I work with is give them the how, because that's the important part.
Yeah. Are you able to, you know, I mean, I understand it's probably a pretty detailed, pretty complex conversation, or probably many, many conversations, and this is what people pay you for, and there's a reason for it. But are you able to kind of briefly describe that how, or some of the techniques that you guys use or that you recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it is super, super complicated, but I can lay out the framework for it. When I say super complicated, really, it's not that. I shouldn't call it complicated. What I should say is it takes a bit. It's like work, right?
It's, you know, practice,
to become a great shooter. You know, we could have Steph Curry come in and talk to a group for a half hour, 45 minutes, and you know, they're gonna be introduced to some great stuff. But to become a great shooter, you have to put in the hours, and not just the hours, but the correct hours, right? The fundamentally correct hours in order to become that great shooter. And the mind's like that. But here's what I tell every last group, every last team and individual that I talk to, is that at the brain's core, the core function of the brain is survival. So the survival instinct is the most powerful instinct that we have. And so if you think about our evolution, the prehistoric human, survival literally meant food, shelter, water, you know, protection from predators. Fast forward to the modern era, when it comes to athletes, what it really looks like is, am I thriving or am I not thriving? And when I'm not thriving, when I'm not starting, when I'm not getting statistics, when I'm not getting recognized, noticed, all those things can send a signal to the brain. I'm not thriving. Something's wrong. There's something dangerous here. And so it triggers our survival instinct, our fight or flight. And fight or flight goes off in our brain, and now we're battling that. And so I always talk about, that's reactivity, meaning that we're reactive to the event that happened, the missed shot, the bad game, the multiple missed shots, the turnover, the missed foul shot late, the, you know, getting, you know, no longer in the starting lineup, not getting the minutes I wanted, whatever, right? All those things that any athlete that's ever competed at some point has faced. And they trigger reactivity. And that reactivity is all in this part of the brain, not all in the solely in this place, but there's a very specific part of the brain called the amygdala. That's what it does. It sends these signals. It picks up on what's going on, what's the danger, and how do I get out of it, basically. But it's super reactive and super emotional. And what we're trying to do is teach athletes that's what's going on, that's what's firing at that moment. But then there's another part of the brain that's, and so the, before I jump to that part, the amygdala is without, there is no conscious need to trigger it. It triggers on its own. You don't have to say, hey, what's going on here? It just goes and it gives us the signals. But another part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, is designed for rational thought and for decision making and facts. And that part of the brain, however, takes some conscious effort to kind of get into. And that's the part of the brain that we would say responds to situations. So the reality is what we're trying to do is move from reaction to response. So when you miss a shot or you have a bad turnover, you have a bad game, the natural, and in fact, almost you can't do anything about, is the reactive feeling, the emotional feeling of disappointment, whatever emotion that it kind of brings up in you. And so I allow for the athletes that I work with to understand, don't even worry about that. Like, it is there. It's going to be there. Why wouldn't it be there? We want to win games. We want to perform. We want to do well. What we're trying to do is say, how quickly, though, can we move from that reactive state to the responsive state? Because the responsive state is now where we're going to choose the way we're going to focus our attention. So what can we focus on our attention on post whatever the event was that triggered us? And that's when I said it's complicated. That's where the real work comes in.
Right. And what kind of techniques are used to create a response rather than a reaction? I mean, are you talking about kind of like breath work and that sort of stuff, like relaxation techniques, or what kind of things are you talking about there?
Yeah, I'm a massive believer. I know it sounds ridiculous, but in learning how to use deep breathing, when I say ridiculous, only because it sounds so simplistic. However, it's not, and it's not used very often, or certainly enough. I teach a technique called 6-1-7 breathing, which is just a inhale through the nose for a count of six, and then a pause for one, and then a full exhale for a count of seven through the mouth. And so that absolutely is part of the process. I also absolutely recommend for everyone and anyone, whether you're a coach, whether you're a player, whether you're a parent, working professional, how to use mindfulness techniques. Are you familiar with mindfulness?
Yes, I am, but feel free to explain I'm big into the mindfulness, the meditation, the breathing, that sort
awesome.
Of stuff. And unfortunately, I got into it post my basketball career, because I think it could have really helped me as a basketball player, because I, especially early on, I was what a lot of coaches might describe as a head case, you know, where I miss one shot and I absolutely freak out and, you know, get so down on myself that it starts affecting my play. I mean, I could have used this times 100.
Okay, so and you and a million others, by the
right.
way. I mean, and I want to say one of the things that I attempt to do is to normalize, like what you just said actually is, I can't tell you how typical that is. And you would be surprised how many athletes that you watch that you think, wow, they seem to bounce back quick, or they seem to, you know, they're just great, whatever way that you would describe them. And behind the scenes, however, they're exactly what you're saying. They're battling those same things. You know, and sometimes they just come through, some, you know, sometimes not, or they get, you know, whatever. But until they get these skills, like you just mentioned, they're struggling with it too. So mindfulness to me is literally the ability to toggle from the reactive state to the responsive state. And so what do I mean by that? So if you try to still your mind to the present, to the just what's happening right here, right now, what we find is that the mind wants to jump to the past or the future all the time, almost constantly. And it's always looking for, well, what just happened, and starts to think about it and get consumed by it, or what could happen? What's the potential thing that could happen? And it rarely is able to stay here and now in the present.
And do just to interrupt real quick, do we know why that is?
Yes. So here's going back to kind of what I was saying before about that that survival instinct. The brain's hardwired to pick up on safety. So most of the time we are either caught in what was the last thing that didn't work out well so that we try to prevent it from happening, or we're trying to head off the next potential thing from happening. So the mind is really designed to be in this protective state almost all the time. And so from an athlete perspective, going back to your example of your missed shot, and then what you would start to do is, the other part of it is that the brain, have you ever heard this phrase that what fires together wires together?
I have not, but I'm interested to hear your explanation.
So basically, your missed shot turned into missed shot means I'm throwing things out. You could be more specific with it, but means I'm not good enough. I'm not going to succeed. I'm not going to win. I'm not going to become what I'm supposed to become. Okay. And so that's the firing. Missed shot, that ceiling. Then what unfortunately happens is that wires together, meaning that not only did it fire together once, twice, three, now it's going to be wired together, meaning that the brain essentially is lazy. Now that you've created the pathway from the event to that feeling and those words and belief, it is now wired. And you cannot break that unless you're consciously aware of it and you act upon it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. And is that the way to break it, where you become conscious of it and then you use these techniques that you teach? Is that essentially what you're doing? You're teaching athletes the way to break this wiring, so to speak?
Absolutely. So now take it back to mindfulness, and I'll real generically go through mindfulness, and I'm probably going to do an injustice because of the fact that it's an awesome, wonderful practice, but it takes a little time. But essentially the goal in mindfulness is to focus on a single place of attention, whether that be your breath, whether that be body sensation, whether that be sound. Those are typically the three single places of attention, and try to really be locked in and, really experience whatever's happening right here, right now. And then, as you can probably tell anybody that's listening, your mind wanders off and it gets caught up in, man, I really wish I would have done that better earlier today. Or, man, I have this big meeting later this afternoon. How's that going to go? Am I ready for it? Or random, like, what am I going to have for lunch later or dinner? Or what, it can go all these different places. And then what mindfulness teaches is, when you catch your mind wandered off to any of these places, become aware of that and then bring it back to that place of attention without judgment, without judging yourself for losing attention. Just bring it back. And that process that I just explained begins the process of awareness and reshaping or refocusing attention. Now you're building new wiring at that point.
And is that so, like, is that kind of what you recommend if people come to you, say, okay, well, let's start with a mindfulness practice? I mean, so that these athletes can kind of have, I guess, that fundamental, so to speak, that they can be aware of their thoughts and then I guess rewire accordingly once they're able to be mindful and figure out, okay, I'm having this thought. Now, instead of reacting, I'm gonna respond to it appropriately.
Absolutely. So at the core, the whole purpose of my app is, I probably talk about the sessions, which I call mindset workouts.
Because what is your app called?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. It's called Doso, D-O-S-O, one word. It's in the App Store, and they're about 10 to 12 minutes each session,
But I call them mindset workouts because it's really, you know how like when we talk about muscle memory and repetition of shot, let's say. And to me, this is the muscle memory of the mind. It's the wiring of learning how. So for you, when you use the example of yourself, what was happening is you would fall into that trap. It was a habit, basically, a mental habit at that point. And what you didn't have was a mechanism to become aware of it, which you may have even become aware of it, but you didn't know how to then refocus it. And basically what individuals need, if they don't have a way out, is that they need the next success in order to get out of it. So let's say you missed 2 shots, 3 shots, 4 shots in a row. At that point, you tell me if you didn't have this experience, you start hunting, like, I need, you're chasing almost the next make. And you're like,
I needed that ball to go in the hoop.
Yeah. Or, and if it didn't, like, confidence is shot.
Yeah.
You know, there is, like, you're needing this outcome in order to continue to feel good or to even get back to neutral. And what we're saying here is it's hard. I'm not going to lie. This is a hard process, but that you can take your attention from that last miss, probably use a breath, come back to the present, and actually start to say, okay, what matters now? And for a shooter, it's, you know, how hard am I, you know, running off screens? Am I curling up? Are my hands ready? Is my body, you know, ready? Am I in that ready to shoot position, or am I hesitating? Am I now coming off screens in a different way? Am I not catching to shoot, but catching to pass? Like, those things begin to change as my mind changes on how I'm feeling.
Right.
And so the goal for what we're teaching is those habits and behaviors that I mentioned of a shooter when they're feeling good are, you're able to, first of all, you control them. Like, they're within your control, let's say. Now, whether the ball goes in is not, but the rest of it is within your control.
Right.
And how quickly you can get back to the habits and behaviors that lead to success, don't guarantee success, but that lead to success, is how quickly you become back into that kind of strong, positive place, rather than potentially in a hesitant, contracted mind.
Right. Right. And so, I mean, you know, with mindfulness, so you're teaching that as kind of like that base fundamental. What other techniques are you using? I mean, visualization and other things like that, or is it all just kind of getting more in depth with the mindfulness as you go?
Well, so if I was going to walk through the typical practice, the first number of sessions is probably based totally on helping the athlete understand the mind, like I explained here, and, you know, and the how, where fight or flight and how, you know, the brain works under stress and pressure, and just letting them get questions answered and getting comfortable with just understanding why they do what they do, then getting specific with what they do, right? So each of us has different things that potentially trigger us into a place that we become super reactive and potentially go into a negative thought space. And so from a process standpoint, those things are going to be what takes up, probably the first number of sessions. Then we'll probably start to introduce these techniques. And so mindfulness and breathing is going to be pretty early on, for sure. And then it will stay a part of it forever, as far as I'm concerned. It should be part of your daily practice from that point forward. But then I also do something with almost every athlete called best self. And so I start to ask them, what are the actions and behaviors that are within your control? So you could be up 30 or down 30. You can be hitting shots or missing shots. And these things are still within your control. And so these are very actionable behaviors that we're thinking about. So what is your communication like? What's your energy level like? What's your body language look like? How are you connecting with your teammates? How are you, again, how are you, you know, coming off screens, where are your hands, you know, all the different things that we attribute to when you feel your best and when you know you're playing at your best.
Yeah, no, I love that. And that's something we talk to our athletes a lot about, is control what you can control. But to your point, I think we could do a much better job of saying, okay, well, how, you know, how do we control what we control? And, you know, what does that all look like? I think we could do probably a much better job with that.
Yeah. And so let's take it a step further. So I've had players in the past, really, really good, really, really smart, like you name it. And they want to battle me on what they control. And so I don't know if you caught, but I said, we don't control the ball going in, mm-hmm. right? And you know this, right? How many times have you had a shot where it comes out of your, comes off your fingertips and you're like, that felt perfect.
Right.
And hits the back rim, bounces out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably been other times where you're like, oh, and the next thing you know, it goes in, mm-hmm. right? And so just because we do everything exactly right, it does not mean that we are going to get the outcome that we want. So one of the pieces is really learning this painful lesson, really, that we do not control outcomes. We don't really even control what happens to us in life. But if we take care of the habits and behaviors that we know most often lead to success, then we are putting ourselves in position to have that success more often than not. And that's really, at the end of the day, pretty much as good as we can do.
Yeah, I love that. I really like that. And that's one of the kind of life lessons that we're always talking about, something that you can really learn from sports, is like, you know, you control what you can control. It's like you said, the outcome might not be what you want it to be. But, you know, at the end of the day, as long as you control those things that you have control over, you know, you're going to put yourself in the best position to possibly succeed. It doesn't guarantee it, but the best possible position. And then and that translates to off the court, too. I mean, it's in my life every day right now, you know, and I think everyone's.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great.
It's life stuff, right? I mean, that's the stuff. If you follow that in life, you're probably going to do okay.
Yeah. And you know what the cool thing is about sports, especially, you know, if you are a competitive player at the youth level, is that the main lessons you learn are mental lessons much more than physical lessons. And those mental, because they're mental lessons you learn, I mean, that's obviously much more easy to translate later on when you're no longer playing basketball, you're no longer playing whatever sport it is. Those mental lessons last a very, very long time throughout the rest of your life.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, the greatest of us. I mean, let's look at LeBron right now, 33, I think. How many more years can he play at that level? And then at some point you have another 30, 40, 50 years left, right? And that's the best of the best. Most, you know, long before that are done.
Yeah.
And so the other parts are the parts that are ultimately going to stay with you throughout a lot of other stuff.
Yeah. Hey, what would you recommend for young players to get started on some sort of mental training? Because I think I read on your website and I liked how you said it. You said the mistake that most athletes make is that we overtrain our bodies and undertrain our mind. I would 100% agree with that. It was true in my case, and it's true of most of the young athletes I see out there. So what would you recommend as like a starting point for a young athlete out there that wants to get started on the mental aspect?
So there's a couple things that I think also go into that, right? Which is that especially early on, we are so hyper physical, right? And I'm just thinking back to my own experience, and I'm sure you can echo this. Early on, you just feel so good and so strong, and you can jump and you can move. Like, everything early is about the physical, at least it feels that way. And so there aren't a ton of young people who are, it's kind of like, but show me that, crossover. That's what I really want to learn. Right. Cause we're so hyper physical. So the quick answers to this would be, first, if it is a young athlete that says, I really want to get to this place. And believe me, I didn't come on here to promote my app, but I would say that that's such a great place to start, because anything like it, whether it's my app or something similar, which is learn, because it teaches why we do what we do. And so you understand the mind a little bit, and then you start doing this real life skill, right? The real life skill of starting to get some control over where I give my attention. Because what we give our attention to is ultimately what grows. So if we give our attention to the misses, unfortunately, that's probably what's going to grow. Certainly from a feeling standpoint, that's what's going to start to grow, that hesitation and negativity. Or if we give our attention to what's next, well, I'm going to come off the screen really strong, and I'm going to have my hands ready, and I'm not, and I'm going to keep talking to my teammates, and I'm going to play great defense. And then those things become what grow. So first, I would say something to that would be a great place for a young athlete to work to start.
And would you recommend that as a starting point for coaches and parents as well that are interested in teaching their young athlete about this, or kind of somewhat coaching their young athlete on it?
I'm smiling right now, kind of laughing, because that's kind of the second part of my answer. Is I actually believe at the youth level, the greatest impact that we can have for young athletes is actually the adults, right? So what are we teaching? What are we saying? How are we behaving? Now think about it. Think how many coaches say that they want a calm and composed player that can handle the chaos at the end of a game or a bad call that goes against them, that you better be able to overcome that. Even young athletes, where we say that they should. And then we look over at the sideline and the parents are going crazy in the stands and the coach is screaming at the ref because it was a bad call. So we can say what we want about what we want them to be, but our actions and our own ability to control ourselves and focus on what actually matters and what we want to teach them is way off. And absolutely. So ultimately what we're teaching them is, when a bad call happens, freak out.
Yeah, act like we do.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, absolutely, I think that and the same impact can happen for the adult. You said it. You didn't come to learning about mindfulness and practicing it till post playing. But hopefully it's impacting, your career at this point. I don't know if you have kids, but if you're a parent, I guarantee, I can tell you from my standpoint as a parent, it helps me with how I parent. Helps me professionally. And then I can start to teach it. But you can't ask a young person to be mentally more composed than you if you're the one that's freaking out and doing X, Y, and Z. And then you're asking a young person who is not equipped, quite frankly, at that point, to be able to control their emotions. Again, it goes back to what we said at the start. The what is the easy part. The how is the hard part. So if we want to get better, we should get better first ourselves as the adults, and then we can start to help the young people get better.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100% there. And honestly, like, just that breathing technique that you described earlier in the show, I mean, could help our parents and our coaches so much. When a ref makes a terrible call, when, a parent has a child that's not getting as much playing time as they might want, use some of this breathing techniques to just calm down. It's like you said, respond, don't just react from whatever your brain is triggering you, your first reaction to be.
Yeah, it's 100. I mean, it's literally at the base of all of our ability to handle difficult. So what we're talking about right now is literally the foundation of handling difficult situations.
Yeah. Awesome. Hey, well, you know, I think that's a good place to wrap it up. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but you know, on a final note, where can people find you, whether that's your website online or your social media? You know, where would you like to direct anyone listening to this?
My website is wellperformancecoach.com. You can find me on Twitter at wellperformance and on Instagram also at wellperformance. My Facebook page is Well Performance Sports Psychology Services.
Awesome. Well, Stu, thanks so much for being on. We really appreciate it. And we'll make sure we get your information out there. And if anyone has any questions, they will be able to email us and we will direct them to you. And good luck with everything you're doing, man.
Appreciate it, Brendan. It was great.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Thanks for having me.